Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge. Has been in the tech world for most of his career, with 14 plus years now at Salesforce. He's currently the SVP, Sales and Distribution, Recruiting and Global Talent Attraction. I'm sorry, Mark. And that's quite the title. He has seen the evolution of recruiting over the last 20 years and could certainly speak to it from a global standpoint. Mark is prolific on LinkedIn, and I've seen him post from London, Paris, and Dublin all within 5 days. He is committed to all aspects of leadership, including team and personal well-being. I know that Mark is a runner. He supports his daughter in cross country and recently has started taking cold plunges. Mark will offer us many great insights on how recruiting will remain human-centric in the age of AI. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Atra. Thanks for having me here, and quite the intro, so I appreciate that. But you covered pretty much everything. I think we're good.
Okay, good stuff. So we're going to have a conversation, Mark, about how leaders and organizations recruit today and will in the future. But before we take that plunge... Got it? Before we take that plunge, we're going to come to know you a little bit more. So at the council, we would believe in focusing and remaining human-centric. So you're human. Let's center on you. So I use the Proust questionnaire. Marcel Proust was an essayist and author who would use these questions to discover the true nature, because he believed when you answered these questions, we come to know the true nature of the person who's responding.
All right.
All right. So here's your first question, Mark. Which talent would you most like to have?
Oh, I love, we're starting deep. I like it. Well, my daughter actually is starting to play the ukulele at school. And she's like, Dad, do you know how to like play the guitar or anything? I'm like, I would love to be able to play the guitar or really any instrument. I just don't have the finger dexterity. So that would be something I would love, this the skill of being able to play an instrument, particularly the guitar, I think would be pretty cool.
Yes, and I understand there's a real calling for fathers with guitars, right?
In grow. Totally. Of course. I can't fulfill that need, unfortunately, but I can cheer her on from the sidelines.
Exactly. If you were to die, Mark, and were to come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Oh, I think for me, we just came back from a trip where we happened to see some animals in the wilderness, and my favorite animal is a cheetah. I think that would be a different way to see the world, coming from an animal in the wild like that, and having that kind of blazing speed and sort of see the world through a different lens would be pretty cool. So I'm going to go with the cheetah. It just happens to be my favorite animal.
Nice. So let's talk recruiting, Mark.
Love it.
Some of our listeners might not realize that AI really has been used for quite a while now in recruiting. Would you start this conversation by explaining a bit how it's used, how AI has changed the game in recruiting for organizations and for those looking for roles?
Yeah, I think you make a great point. Obviously, AI has really blown up and is already starting to really change how we work and how we live in a lot of different ways. But it has been here for a while, right? And there's different ways that AI has been used. Obviously, we're talking a lot more about generative AI these days, but previously and for the last even 10 years here at Salesforce in my job, predictive AI has been a big part of that for us and in the marketplace. So you have to look at sort of all the different variations of AI, and obviously it's becoming more and more advanced, but there were a lot of those foundational pieces in play 10, 15 years ago. We're just getting much more advanced. So For us, something like predictive is still was sort of like the baseline that we used when you take a look at for recruiting, even when you look at your throughput rates and you start thinking about how you're forecasting your hiring numbers, just like for our sales organization, they do that as well. You take all those inputs around, hey, how many people do you have in your pipeline? How many people at each of your different interview stages, and what's your sort of success rates, and getting to a predictive number on how many hires you expect to make in a week, month, quarter, year. We've been doing that for a while now, right? Of course, the AI we're talking about now is sort of supercharged on top of that as we start thinking about agents and we start thinking about really automating sort of the work processes that we're in today. That's really exciting. And I know that there is definitely a human component to that, and how humans and AIs and human and agents work together. It's getting really exciting, but I don't think it's a new concept entirely. I think it's just an evolving concept that we're all sort of catching up to.
Right. And so you've touched on my next question. It sounds rather clinical, right? The way you've described it, numbers and predicting and pipeline and funnels. And, you know, I could probably throw out a few other keywords. But what does it then, what does it mean then to remain human centric in all of this?
Yeah. And I think that it's a tool. AI is a tool. Agents are a tool that they are going to replace certain bodies of work, but they're not replacing work entirely, right? And so when you take a look at the recruiting function, right, let's stay in our world for now, you know, there are a lot of administrative tasks or tasks that can be automated that I think AI can help supplement. People, that's not people's full-time job doing those administrative tasks. It might be a portion, 10, 20, 30% of it that can be automated. That's one component of it. I think that there's a secondary component of it where it's going to enhance our ability to go deeper and wider in our knowledge base, because it's going to have visibility into more data sets, you know, have a better understanding of some of the challenges that we might be facing as recruiters, and give us insights or give us data points. It's not making the final decisions, but it's empowering a recruiter or, you know, an employee to have a much broader scope and understanding of the data sets that are available to them that they might not be able to look at on their own. It's sort of consolidating that and highlighting that and giving an analysis, but someone's got to make that ultimate decision. And that's where there is still that human component to it, right? And I think we're seeing that transformation. I think that there's a lot of unknown still about AI, right? So I think people automatically go to the movies and go to the worst case scenarios. I don't think we're there yet. I don't see that coming anytime soon, but I do see it as really enhancing our ability to do our jobs in a completely different way, which is very exciting.
Right. And so it becomes an enabler, perhaps as well. And I think the key, and would you maybe comment on this? I think the key is also to think about how you're going to use this tool. In particular, you know, in doing a bit of research, there's some concerns, I think, as it relates to also knowledge workers, where the role is more complex. And it's not so simple, perhaps, just to add a couple of features or to add some keywords, right, within the job description. So could you maybe comment a little bit on that, on the more complex, to what degree, or maybe we're moving towards where we can also have those complex jobs, but are there some limitations or considerations, maybe not limitations, but considerations?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the sort of the best direction to go with that, but like, I think that it really is going to enhance our abilities, right? And to your point, some areas are going to be much more impacted, right, where it is more highly administrative. So there is a lot more tasks that can be automated. So it's like, okay, now how do we upskill those individuals to take on other tasks? Or how can they go deeper and wider in the more human components of the role? For example, you mentioned at the beginning that I lead our global talent attraction team. Let's take that role, for example, and the role of sourcing and recruiting. It's going through a transformation right now as well. Is that role going to be fully automated? No, because if I'm a passive candidate, am I going to get sort of engaged with an agent that's going to pull me out of my job today, fully qualify me and get me in front of a hiring manager, run my full interview? I don't think so. I'm going to need some sort of human touch, but can the agent find me on LinkedIn? Can the agent understand my full profile? Can the agent give all that information to a recruiter who then when they call me, they know my LinkedIn posts. They've seen how I've posted on Twitter or whatever social media platforms there are. And now we're having a much more engaged conversation. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not replacing and it's not taking over, but it's enhancing. So it's taking some of that body of work off the plate of an individual, but it's allowing them to go focus in other areas. So I do think that idea of how do we continue to upskill or broaden our roles with the advent of AI and how it's taking over some of the responsibilities, that frees us up to go deeper and wider in other areas. Does that answer your
question? And I think certainly that covers or illustrates and illuminates, which is great, more the function of the recruiter in AI. And I think what I was thinking also was the job, the role in and of itself that you're recruiting for, that there may be some roles where the AI tool is very easy or can find those candidates very easily, but there are some roles where there's greater complexity or nuance in what you're right, what you have to deliver and what you actually do, especially in, let's say, the knowledge economy, where it may not be as obvious, I guess is what I was saying.
Right.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Mike. I think, and so that to your point then is where the recruiter's time is needed to really do a bit of their own digging and their own, right? Like not just relying on the tool, but doing their own work to source those kinds of candidates.
100%. Like we have certain roles and there are certain roles in technology that are, especially when you look in like public sector spaces, for example, where you have to have a certain level of clearance and you have to have a certain, and these people maybe aren't even on things like LinkedIn or easy to find. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah.
There is still going to be a very human component, especially in recruiting, where you're dealing with people all day. Going out and finding those individuals is one thing. Now, how do you actually engage someone and like understand what are their drivers? You know what I mean? Like, it isn't as simple as a math equation. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, here's one person that's done this one thing. So they're obviously going to want our job and they're going to it doesn't work that way, right? There is an engagement. You have to understand traits and drivers and motivations and what do you offer and does that fit with what they want? And no two people are the same. Like that's the nuance of recruiting where you're dealing with humans is that there's so many variables about what's going on in someone's personal life or what's going on, you know, what are their career aspirations? It's like that doesn't...
Do they want to commute that far?
Totally. Like that doesn't... jump off a page on LinkedIn that an agent and even looking at their social media profile, there is still a gap there to understand the individual and the human that you're dealing with. Since it's a human to human interaction in recruiting, that can't be fully automated to get to that level of depth. To an extent, it could, you know, if you're looking, let's say it's a customer service agent role and it's an entry level role, perhaps, and you have very minimal requirements as the employer. And so you're just looking high volume and
you have actional, right? In that case, it's kind of transactional.
Sure. Maybe that can be more automated. But even still, when you get to that finish line and you're talking about getting that person on board and you want to build that sense of community of someone joining your team, like taking a job is such a personal decision and such an impactful part of a human's life, right? We spend so much time at work. You can't automate that entire process. It just won't happen. You know what I mean? And that's where we need that human connection.
Even if it did happen, it wouldn't be wise because it's not going to necessarily result in any kind of longevity, right? And so until you discover what the win-win is, to your point, on for both parties, both the organization and the employee, right? That's where your success factor comes into play is understanding what that win is what you're describing. And so I want to take you back to a comment you made where you said, you know, we all jump, and I certainly am guilty of that sometimes, to the gloom and doom end, right, of AI. And I always think of how prophetic perhaps, you know, that movie 2001 was, which sort of I know dates me, right? Hell, I'm not going to open that door, Dave. Well, I know at Salesforce, ethics is very deeply embedded. You have an ethics committee and you establish principles, right, for the ethical use of AI and AI technology. And so what should recruiting and hiring managers be aware of and build? So others, right? So I'm talking also giving advice here to other organizations. Be aware of and what controls to build for use of AI in recruitment.
Yeah. And I'm going to take a step, even zoom out a little bit, right? And I think that with all AI models, having a sharing model in place from a security standpoint is super important. So what I mean by a sharing model is like, let's look at banking, for example, right? Like if you and I go to the same bank, all of our data and all of our information resides within that bank, but my banker isn't able to see your data and your banker isn't able to see my data, right? It's even though it's shared, it still has the security in place that that data doesn't spill over. That is a super important factor, right? And having those security measures in place, and that's where Salesforce has done a really good job with the AI implementations that they've been doing. And they are so focused on that security where, you know, you can read some Gartner reports about other AI tools and solutions out there where they've had that spillage and that problem. And that's where you break that trust really quickly. And it's something that already has so much anxiety around AI. And then to have those breaches of trust is really impactful, right? So you have to have that security. You have to have that ethical use case in place right from the very beginning, because there is so much anxiety and uncertainty around what this technology can do already, right? So that's at the high level. So I just want to sort of mention that.
Yep.
That's the foundation of it all.
Right.
Then you get into the actual, let's take in the recruiting role. Obviously, there's a lot of laws going into place about what you can and cannot do with AI. One of the biggest sort of sticking points is that AI shouldn't be the selecting tool. Right? It can give you information, it can give recommendations, but it shouldn't be the tool that makes the yes or no decision moving forward. And I think we're adhering to that as well. You know, I think that that's a main driver that feels like the right line in the sand to draw, you know what I mean? And so like we use AI tools to evaluate resumes that come in. We see, you know, over 1 million resumes every year that come into our system. We get, you know, thousands upon thousands, you know, millions of resumes coming in. We need a stack ranking and a measurement that says, hey, how does this resume compare against the job description or the job profile? But it's not then eliminating them and we're not seeing the people that it doesn't score as high. We see it all. It just gives us a starting point to evaluate and sort of points out what we should look at as to why that has been chosen. So again, the human part of it is still making the decision, still has eyes on it. And then we make that decision based on the knowledge that we have about the role and the company and what we're looking for. But AI sort of gives us that head start into, hey, what should we be looking at? Where might there be causes for concern? And then we'll take that double click into it to see. I think having that trust layer built in is going to be super important moving forward as this technology continues to evolve. Trust really sits at the center of it, both within a corporation, but then for obviously candidates that are applying, there are a lot of ways it can go wrong, right? Realistically. So having those guardrails in place from the very beginning is incredibly important.
Is critical. And so I have a follow-up question that I didn't have in the prep document, actually. So here we go. So talk a little bit about the global context of this, because I would assume that you're a global company.
Yeah.
You also have to adhere to the country laws as it relates. So I'm curious, what differences do you see, let's say, in North America versus Europe as to how you're, quote unquote, allowed to, or how you're able to use the tool in various jurisdictions?
Yeah, definitely. And it does vary everywhere you go. So it's important to have a great legal team that's staying on top of it all and informing you. So shout out to all our legal teammates out there. But if I'm going to generalize it a little bit, a lot of it is about consent and transparency, right? And telling people, hey, we are using an AI tool for this, right? So if you're looking at, let's say transcripts of interviews or having an AI transcribe your interviews, telling people ahead of time, hey, this is what we're doing, and giving them that opt-out option. I would say in the majority of cases, that's going to alleviate a lot of the concerns. I think where the laws get really zeroed in on you is if you're not transparent, right? Or you're doing things that people aren't aware about how their data is being used. How their conversations are being recorded. Like it's an extension of like all of those rules are in place already around mutual consent, around like if we are going to record a live meeting, right? Those ones have been in place for years. Now it's virtual. Now it's with AI. So it's like, it's just an evolution of the laws. These aren't really new laws. They're just sort of catching up to where we are from a technology standpoint. So you just have to sort of stay on top of all of it. And there's a lot. But I think that having consent, having being able to show what you're doing around managing data, how you're using it, those are critical pieces. And that's why we try to be have that right up front in letting people know that we are using these tools. Here's how we're using these tools. But ultimately, the human is the person that's driving this, right?
Right. Yeah. And my novice understanding is that certainly European regulations around data and consent are oftentimes really quite strict compared to right? To, I mean, you could see when you go onto European websites and there the permissions you have to give there versus North America.
Yeah.
So we speaking of humans, the council, we want to ensure that inclusion and equity remains a focus, right, within the shifts that are happening in talent management practices and AI. So how will we ensure that recruitment continues to strive for greater inclusion?
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly important aspect to keep in mind, right? Because, again, when you're looking at LLMs and large language models and you're looking at how AI is built, again, there's a human behind a lot of those, right? That is creating that, or, you know, is that that is building that. And so if you are building it off a biased data set, you're going to get biased results, right? And I think one of the key pieces in the some of the AI tools that we've used is you have to keep tweaking it, right? It's not a set it and forget it in that it's done and it's perfect on day one or day 365 or, you know, day 1,000. You have to continually be looking at it, right? And that's the human aspect of it again. And some of it is just the eye test of it, right? Is if we're looking at resumes that have been, you know, initially stack ranked or some sort of evaluation from an AI before they go to a recruiter, and you're noticing, hey, these are all coming from the same company or they've all gone to the same school or they all have a similar background, it's like you need to say something, right? And you need to go and tweak your algorithm and tweak your AI to say, hey, that's not hitting the mark, right? And that's all doable, right? We train the AI as to what we want. So it's like, again, to me, the human-centric part of this is we need to stay aware and stay make sure that what the AI is giving us in recruiting is what we want. And if it's not, let's go tweak it, because we can adjust and we can make changes, but you have to pay attention just like and make sure it's delivering what you want. And I think equality and making sure that you're getting a diverse slate of talent, whether that be gender diversity, racial diversity, economic status diversity, you know what I mean? Like you want to see that whole thing. And if you're only now seeing people that are coming from university degrees, that have X amount of experience only within a certain industry, you're only going to get a certain type of person.
That's right. You're inclusion. You're going to clone the team, right? You're going to create work.
Totally. And for Salesforce, at least, and I can only speak to my specific examples, we want a company and we want our teams to be reflective of the societies that we work within, right? So it requires that diligence of making sure that you're getting what you want and that it's an equitable process. And that still sits with recruiting and that sits within the HR function to go make sure that that's happened.
Right. And I think I like to always point out to people just question, right? When you said, if you get a bunch of resumes that are so similar, you need to have the skills, I think, to question, to ask why. And yes. So sometimes I talk about our evolution in this atmosphere of AI or in this world of AI, it is about having the skill set now to critically examine the output of the right of what is being produced, being able to prompt effectively. So to your point, create the algorithm that will produce that diversity. But then also if you have done that or haven't done that, regardless, even if you have, is look at that output and critically examine what you've been given and don't take it for right as well. That must be it. There mustn't be anybody different available or capable of doing this role, right?
And that's the thing is that and once you recognize, once you've seen it, you're now sort of responsible for taking action on it, right? So
that's it.
If you're seeing one type of profile, it's like, go back and tweak the algorithm. How do we get to see more candidates from HBCUs, for example, if you're looking to increase, you're not seeing the representation on that front. Or maybe we don't want to see people, you know, we want to see more people that don't have any college degree because we want to expand the scope. And that's not a requirement of the job description. But if the algorithm and the agent has been based off of previous profiles of who you've hired and you just happen to have hired people with that, how do you close that gap? Well, that's where we come in and humans look at it and they tweak that algorithm and they help get us to where we're at. But I think the danger is, hey, we've said it once, let's leave it there.
Yeah, this right. Let him forget it, as you call it.
That would be concerning. There's an opportunity for us to lean in and have that voice, for sure.
For sure. And for our listeners who are not quite as aware of a lingo or a jargon, HBCU stands for?
Oh, sorry. Historically Black Colleges and Universities. Yes, thank you for calling that up. But I would also say just quickly, sorry, on the quality standpoint, we're talking about from a pure recruiting standpoint, but I do think that AI is going to help in general just sort of build a quality. There's a lot of opportunities for equality. And I actually just posted on LinkedIn this morning as well about some work that we're doing with one of our customers who really helps provide counselors for individuals from all walks of life trying to get into college and university. And before, they could only reach, you know, for every counselor that they had, they could reach 60 people. Now they can reach, I think the number is like 300 to 350 because of AI. So allowing people that are coming from maybe underprivileged backgrounds, figure out how to get into college, whether that's what are the right courses to take to get there? How do they find funding to get different grants? So AI, I think, is going to be a game changer as we think about equality. Obviously, we're talking about partly in the recruiting process, but I think in the industry and just in the workplace as a whole, in different walks of life, AI can really help drive a lot of DEI initiatives. And there's a lot of great companies out there that are really looking at doing that sort of thing. So I just wanted to sort of call that out as well, because there is a tremendous power to AI that I think can really help a lot of the problems and challenges that we see in society as well.
It certainly can assist in the identification or the remediation, maybe not in this, not the sole solution.
Split, right? And AI is not a silver bullet either. It's how do you use it to make progress? It's about make steps forward. And I think that's what we need to look at for sure.
And handy, and I'm so upset that the word co-pilot has been branded. It has been used as a project, as a name, right? As a brand, because I used to, prior to that, say a very handy co-pilot, but I don't mean a co-pilot.
Yes, exactly.
So, Mark, we're coming close towards the end of our program, but I have one more official question and then a couple more proof questions.
Yeah.
So we like our final question always to be with leaders and our guests is to be a very practical question for leaders who are listening and they say, okay, this was, you know, an interesting conversation, but now what? Like, what do I do today? So what is the one thing, Mark, as a leader, am going to do today as I'm thinking about recruiting that is going to help me build high performance teams?
Yeah. So I would say the easiest low hanging fruit is education. Read more about it, you know, news articles online, listen to podcasts. There's a lot of free training courses that are available out there as well about learning more about AI systems, how it works within business, how it works within recruiting. Salesforce has some available, but we're not the only ones. There's lots of free resources that are out there and that are available.
Yes.
But I think the more we get a better understanding of how AI can work and like what is a large language model and what are the security measures, like some of it gets pretty technical. You don't have to go, you know, a million miles deep, but getting that initial understanding, I think, is critical. So then you can start to form an opinion about, oh, maybe we could use AI this way, or maybe it could help our business or our customers try to accomplish this. I think education is so key right now. That's number one. Number two, I'd say, is start somewhere, right? And it doesn't even matter where you start, but just getting familiar with it. So take something like scheduling tools, right? There's a lot of AI, there's a lot of free tools around this as well. You don't have to go all in a full like wall-to-wall company implementation. There's lots of free individual tools that individuals can utilize within their own day-to-day. If your company's maybe not ready to go all in, you as a individual, start playing with it, right? Start seeing what works and what doesn't. There's a lot of different vendors. There's a lot of innovation that's coming out. It feels like every day that you can sort of get your hands on. But those would be my two pieces of advice. Number one, get educated on it. Learn more, even if it's not your area of expertise or something you're overly passionate about. It's coming, right? There's no way around it. So you're going to want to be educated. And then number two, practically start using it. Scheduling, I love scheduling because it's the...
You read it about four times. I guess I think you like scheduling, Mark.
Well, it's such an easy one that like...
Right.
It speeds up your day-to-day. Like, look at your most administrative tasks within your job today and then do a Google search to see if there's an AI, free AI tool out there that automates that function. There probably is, right? And then you can utilize that and just start playing with it, and it may work and great. You utilize it more, it might not. And then you started to form an opinion about maybe where there are some gaps in AI today as well.
And in addition to scheduling, another one that I think is pretty brilliant is the note-taking tools.
Love it.
And I mean, I won't again give props to one particular one, but I use one where I was fascinated and then almost creeped out a bit about how accurate it was. But you have a number of people speaking, and its ability to synthesize the conversation and capture what the action items are is really remarkable.
So
again, with permission. So I think that's important, that I think you would underline that as well. But yes, if you're recruiting and you're just the individual, you're recruiting and you say, may I use this note-taking tool to the candidates you're speaking with? Because it allows me to capture the full sum of what you said or what we discussed, and I can focus on our conversation versus taking notes. I think that tool alone could really move a lot of things, right? For individuals, leaders who are doing recruiting, assuming their organization will permit it and they ask permission of the candidate, be using as well. Yeah, great. Mark, my question for you to get to know you a little bit more beyond the cold plunges is, if you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
That's probably a better question for my wife, but...
What would she say if I was interviewing her?
Overall, I'm sure I could be a little bit neater in some areas of my life, but... Honestly, I feel very fortunate. I've been very blessed in a lot of different ways. Hey, do I wish that I hadn't lost all the hair? I always make the joke. I started at Salesforce almost 15 years ago. I was single, just dating my wife, the girlfriend at the time. I had hair. 15 years later, I have 3 kids, no hair, and married. I'm just saying, if it had stuck around, I would have been okay with that as well.
Great. Fair enough. And who are your heroes in real life, Mark?
Heroes? I keep it pretty close to home for me. I look at, now that I'm a parent and having kids, and I have 3 kids, and I came from a family where I have a brother and a sister as well. So I was the youngest of 3. And I look at my parents, I'm like, I don't know how you did this.
And I'm like, they...
Brilliant now, right? All of a sudden they've become like these
totally kids.
Yeah.
I come from a family of teachers. I think teachers for me are also people that I really admire and I look up to when I look at, the day-to-day that they go through and sort of educating the future. And they don't always get the most resources to go do it, but they show up, they're teaching, they're engaging the young people of today so that they can be our future leaders and things like that. So I have a huge admiration for teachers as well. I think they do a lot of great work. Obviously, any frontline worker as well. But for me, I come from a teacher family. So I really look up to that role as well.
For sure. A huge shout out to teachers. I see my daughter now and her teacher, and I'm amazed. I'm amazed at how she is developing, right? I mean, we develop obviously our children, but boy, it's more than just academics. They're developing humans.
Totally.
Age adults, they're developing our future adults.
It's a bell quickly, you know, men grow up fast. So, but
Mark, on behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, I'd like to thank you for joining me in conversation today. And I really appreciate all the insights you've shared.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think it's such a great conversation to have. And I'm a big fan of the podcast overall. So thank you so much for having me. And my pleasure entirely.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.